Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
I would like to speak to America's men for 1 minute.
That slacker barista.
I start getting full of emotion.
Now we're going to build this new bridge here.
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't.
Betches Up Podcast.
Like, how are people surviving?
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
And I'm Elise Morales.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. First topic today just had me wondering, are your home's FBI search ready? If you heard the FBI knock at your door in a friendly manner, would you bug out and go to hide stuff? Or would you feel like my home is FBI ready?
My home's FBI ready, I think. I mean, like, do they care about weed?
That's the thing. I don't think so.
That's really the only thing.
I would still always run to hide that.
Now that weed is legal in New York.
No.
But this is the Federal Bureau. This is the Federal Bureau.
But we're in New York and you're allowed to possess it, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
I would maybe that's Joe's flush that down. I would maybe flush down any potential anything in that realm of mind altering substance, flush down the toilet just to be safe. Maybe throw out, you know, previously used paraphernalia. But like, I'm trying to think, like,
yeah, so I don't have any classified documents personally, so I really don't think I'm not worried about anything. On occasion, I'll say it, on occasion I'll have some mushrooms, so maybe I would throw those away.
Yeah. I mean, you know, those are easy to
dispose of. Don't come for me now, FBI.
Yeah.
don't come knocking down my door for like one mushroom cap, please.
maybe just like flush those down, throw them out the window.
Yeah.
Possession is 9/10 of the law, I think. Is that
yeah,
true?
That's my thing is like if I saw, I looked through my peephole and they were like, it's the FBI, I'd be like, oh, hold on. And then I would probably flush the mushrooms and then, but I don't
you
even
don't have
any
to let
right
them
now.
In. You don't have to let them in without
yeah,
a search
warrant.
Yeah,
that's the other thing.
Also, what I'm thinking though is what would you be more afraid of the FBI searching? Your search history or your home?
I mean, I'm not searching anything that embarrassing, though I'm sure if they had my entire search history, they could put together like a dossier on me of some kind. So like I wouldn't like the FBI to like reveal how much I like look at my like ex's wife's Instagram or whatever. Like,
okay, so, fair. Like, so just embarrassment, not
yeah,
legal issues.
Like, exactly. I don't think that it would really be a legal situation. They could potentially find information that I would find like mildly embarrassing. But I'm not too worried about them knocking on my door. I got to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, again, lack of classified documents definitely helps.
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely probably prefer them looking in my, I don't know. I'm not searching for anything crazy anyway. Also, I have no shame. I don't care. But
everything I search for is explained by my job.
Right.
So that to me is like, And everything
even
I do search
for
is for
assassinating
my job.
A former president. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I mean, even most things I search like are for in some way. Like, that's all I do is my job.
So do you think like, that you Joe know. Had anything to hide before? Like, because what we're talking about today is that on Friday, President Biden invited the FBI. They're like, you know what? Let's sort this out. You can come on over and search through all of my shit, literally all of it at my home. Take whatever is classified that you find. No problem. Do we think he had any bongs to hide?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
No.
He probably had a bunch of like Hubbles or whatever.
Yeah. Yes. I think that Joe is at an age where like he can eat a piece of candy that's too strong. Like he'll be like, this chocolate was like,
oh, I feel weird.
Like,
he just had to get Major out of there so that he wouldn't attack any of the FBI agents.
The thing with Biden's house is that when you're that old, you collect a lot of stuff.
Very true.
And he does – he's probably done a million things that are just, like, wild and with so many celebrities and so many people. So his house is probably not FBI ready just because the range of things in it must just be so large. Because, I mean, have you – if you've ever, like, cleaned out, like, a grandparent's house, like, it's just – endless.
Yeah. Right. You just find something. It's like, and then I was talking about how Marilyn Monroe really died. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. There is also, I feel like, between Hunter and all the young grandkids, maybe there's like a box with like some old crusty weed in the back of like a shoebox that they like, that is like the cousin's Thanksgiving weed that they smoke. You know what I mean? Like,
I have to tell you, my mom once gave me like an old like little Bottega pouch that my grandmother had. And in I must have been like – I was right out of college. And I found the end of a joint in it.
That
and
is
I
iconic.
Showed my mom – wait, it gets better. I showed my mom and she framed it. So like in a
– with the clutch or no?
No, just the
yeah,
end
you gotta
of
use the clutch.
Yeah, I don't know where that is, but oh maybe my God. I'll find
Finding
it.
Finding the end of a joint at Joe's house. I mean, like you're saying, the FBI conducted a 13-hour search of Joe Biden's Delaware home at his own invitation, and authorities had, quote, full access to the president's home, which included personally handwritten notes, files, papers, binders, memorabilia, to-do lists, schedules, and reminders going back decades. I mean, this is an 80-year-old man. Searching an 80-year-old man's house for 13 hours. This is my last question that I'm genuinely curious about your answers. If you were in the FBI, would you rather be on the search team for Mar-a-Lago or Joe Biden's Wilmington home?
Mar-a-Lago, hands
Mar-a-Lago,
down.
Mar-a-Lago, yeah. That's where it's going to be juicy.
Not me. I just want to go through this gentle family man's.
Oh my God. Imagine
shoeboxes full of pictures.
Amanda, you could be walking out of Mar-a-Lago with your pockets full of gold bars.
That's
why
very
would
true.
You not want to be searching
Mar-a-Lago? Or a story
Mar-a-Lago?
For a book that would pay your bills for life.
Yeah. Mar-a-Lago would be so much more interesting.
If I'm in the FBI, I did it because I want to bust doors down and be like, give me all this stuff. I'm here with the FBI. I don't want to be like invited into the home and it's like, no, here you are. I want to be like, put your hands up. Like,
oh, no, I'm thinking purely as myself. I don't want to be in the FBI at all.
No, I personally don't want to be in the FBI. But if I were a version of myself that wanted to be in the FBI, I certainly am there because I want to be I want to be like, I'm here representing the Federal Bureau and flashing my badge. And I'm going full cop in that scenario,
definitely.
I guess.
I don't want to really be like imposing.
Cap includes me, I guess.
Mar-a-Lago would be so fascinating to
search.
It would
be
like, I mean, you might have to like
wear masks.
I was thinking, you might kind of find a dead body. You might find like some chemical. Like, who the fuck knows what you're going to find? And
petrified
firearms.
McDonald's.
Like, I would be tapping on the walls. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't just like stop at the closets. I would bring like a flamethrower. Is that what it's called? A torch and like a lock cutter. It would be so much fun. Wow. Why is this my fantasy?
You're so right, because Joe Biden's would also just be like, you just bored to be like looking around, and then you come upon like a box of sympathy letters for your two children that have died and your former wife.
Like, kids' artwork. Cute, but not interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to go. Right. I want to find like notes, letters, like pictures,
information on the president of France. Because remember, one of the things Donald Trump had was like a binder marked "information on the president of France." That's juicy. That's what.
That's
I'm
true.
At.
And you know, we have already done the work, I think, of you know how this is not great for Joe, but does dramatically contrast with the situation with President Trump. But you know. Evidently, this search turned up yet more classified documents, and it's the first time since November that classified records or material have been found at private addresses of Biden. So they're not disclosing what they found, but it came from Biden's time in the Senate and his time as vice president. As we know, Attorney General Merrick Garland earlier this month appointed a special counsel to investigate Biden's retention of these records after he was vice president. So he's inviting the FBI to come look at them. There is like, I mean, I try to take in every defense of Biden or explanation of Biden with a grain of salt. Like, I found myself over the weekend being like, well, everything's overclassified. And it's like, well, if Trump said that, I would be like, you know, screw you. But like you said, this is a man who has been in public life for a very long time. It seems to be understood that members of government who have access to this information may accidentally bring it home with them. And that's why there are processes to get it back immediately and see if there was any damage. And the difference, obviously, is that Biden has been cooperative every step of the way and Trump resisted it in a criminal manner.
Right. I think the real thing to paint this as is not like the holding of the documents, but it is the hostage taking of the documents and the fact that what he had were things that the National Archives noticed were missing, that they were looking for. There were also top secret documents that were like in this mix and like so classification obviously has multiple levels. I hear myself sounding like I'm justifying it, but the truth is that he held large numbers of documents that that the National Archives wanted noticed were missing hostage for like a year. So that is the real scandal.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's just a difference in intent, I think, between the Biden and Trump documents. The Biden documents are from his vice presidency. They're from his time in the Senate. They're not from his presidency, which like has a different, like Donald Trump owed those documents to the National Archives. The National Archives was reaching out to him. But at the same time, every single time I go to write the newsletter and there's a new batch of Biden documents that have come out, I'm like, this is getting really ridiculous and to be a lot. And I mean, it's tough to say what like coulda, shoulda, would have or whatever, but it does feel like maybe this thorough investigation or searches should have just happened right after the first batch was found. Because I think every single time a new batch is found, we can harp on the differences in the case every once in a while. But as we know, like the broad strokes are the things that really make an impact. And it's not good that they keep finding more documents at his different locations. And then it's like, you know, one of the things is like, it's completely inappropriate for Donald Trump to have classified documents at his beach house, you know? And then it's like, okay, well, there are classified documents at Biden's beach house. Again, I do think there's a difference in intent. I think there's a difference in handling. But it is hard to imagine. Yeah, the number is huge. We don't actually know what types of documents really yet were like that Biden has versus what Trump had. But it doesn't look great. And it's becoming a big mess. And it definitely has handed the House Republicans their first investigation. And it's one that, you know, they were headed towards doing a bunch of Hunter Biden stuff that I think was going to look really, really silly and make them look really, really silly. And this definitely has a more serious sheen to it as like a real investigation. And it gives them, I don't know, it hands them a way to look serious, even though they're not serious. And that is very annoying.
Yeah, you completely encapsulated the whole problem with it. Mm-hmm. Just that is exactly the problem.
It's a huge political problem, even if you can make a case for why it's not like necessarily a huge national security problem.
Yeah.
Another extremely upsetting weekend behind us on various fronts, chief of which, of course, is the mass shooting in Monterey Park, California, which is a predominantly Asian American community east of Los Angeles. So the 72-year-old man believed to be responsible for fatally shooting 10 people and injuring many more died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound after being stopped by officers. This is all in morning announcements as well, but authorities are working to identify a motive still. The man had frequented the dance halls he targeted. He'd even given dance classes there. He was an Asian American male. At the second dance studio he targeted, the 26-year-old owner, I believe, was able to disarm him and get him to flee. The shooter was using a magazine-fed semi-automatic assault pistol with an extended large-capacity magazine. That is not allowed in California. The shooting came after the first day of Lunar New Year celebrations, and I know probably like our listeners are really eager to get names to be able to honor the people that passed away. That is taking a while because a lot of people in this community do have strong ties to countries in Asia still, and authorities are working to contact them and inform the family members. With time disturbances and logistics, it's just been challenging to do. This is crazy. We are 22 days into the year, but this is already the 33rd mass shooting in 2023. A mass shooting, I believe, involves more than 5 people. It's just chilling that, you know, you wake up on a Sunday morning. It always tends to be over the weekend, you know, because people are gathering, people are doing things. And that really is, obviously we've noticed this trend of shooters targeting, you know, events that are supposed to be filled with like merriment and joy. But I mean, it does make you really, really just, you know, people that follow us are like, that don't live in this country. They're like, how do you go grocery shopping without being terrified?
You know, the mass shooters got to go to their 9 to 5. So they're a little busy. Uh-huh. But no, I completely see your, yeah. How do we live? I don't know. It really is not normal. And I think that, like, let's say historically, if there is a future this far in the future, you look back 200 years, you're like, what were those crazy people doing just allowing this? It's inhumane. And I whatever you want to blame it on, like the confluence of factors, the availability, including the availability of guns, you want to call it mental illness, you want to call it whatever it is, the fact is it's a problem and no one is going to do anything. These just get reported as like, here are the events that happened, but there's never any action. Like there's never even any like belief that there could be action. And that is what makes these things so terrible to even just talk about too.
Yeah, and it's just so disturbing that we're in a place where any kind of large gathering that's for merriment or enjoyment, you know, this is like an Asian community celebrating Lunar New Year. It's supposed to be really fun. It's supposed to be the kickoff of like a fun, it's like 12 days of festivities and cool, fun family stuff that's supposed to happen. And we can't have any large gatherings without this like shadow over top of it. And, you know, we don't know why, what this guy was motivated by, whether it was something within the community, whether it had to do with these dance halls, whether like, we don't know. But the bottom line is just that anyone with any motivation to do something like this can carry it out with impunity in the United States. And that's the problem. It's been the problem. It was the problem this weekend. It was the problem with every other mass shooting. It's the problem with all 33 mass shootings this year. And it's going to keep being the issue at the center of all of these events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like you said, Simi, there's always, you know, you can say with this, okay, you can claim that it wasn't hate motivated because it was an Asian male. I mean, clearly that these people were targeted. You can say that this gun was banned in California, but he still got it and shot these people. But at the end of the day, with all of our country's like ills, the proliferation of guns makes it so much easier to exit this world and take a lot of people with you. Like when you have nothing to lose and you're done, like, and you have access, if you just have to drive across state lines to get a deadly weapon, it's just, it's simply too easy. It should be much, much harder to act on that instinct. And in this country, it's nearly effortless in some places.
Right. And like, do you really think that the people who lost their family members or someone that matters to them, do you think they care like where he got the gun or what type of gun he used or why
he knew he lived in America and he could get it easily?
Right. Yeah. Why he did it. Like, that's why even when we talk about, you know, gun control measures, I'm like, yeah, obviously going to support 100%. But the truth is that there are already so many guns in the country that this could happen every day forever and you could never run out.
Like, apparently so, it's happened more than once a day because we've had 33 in 22 days.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it tears, I think, at the fabric of society, and this sounds so subjective that, or so kind of like woo-woo, to just have it to have to enter your mind when you go anywhere public in a crowd that you need to sort of be alert, that you're inherently at risk. And I'm sure, you know, anyone who's ever been in a crowd in any other country, I'm sure – I know it has occurred to me like that innate, that instinctual, like, oh my God, I'm in a crowd, be careful. Mm-hmm. But then I follow up with like, oh, but no one has a gun here. Mm-hmm. So nothing's, everything's, at least I know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, but then I think about crowd crush. Yeah, at least that's not going to happen.
But like crowd crush, sure. But I'm talking
not
about
in a grocery
like,
store. Yeah.
In a mall, like that type of thing. Like you're not going to, you just know that there's not going to be a gunshot.
Yeah, probably. I saw it like a TikTok that was like, it was just like, you know, those TikToks that are like, I just, you know, just being a girly, just like grocery shopping with my music on and my my noise canceling headphones at the grocery store. And so many people commented, you must not live in America because, and like, I do listen to stuff in the grocery store, but it's never occurred to me that like, I just assume I would hear a gunshot, but that was interesting. I did not expect to see those comments.
Well, I think with, and also, you know, when you're somewhere and you hear like a sound and you're like, oh, is that a gunshot? That is, someone should study the overall impact of these things on people's, you know, I don't know if it like really affects many people's actions, but I imagine that that's not like good for the system. And, you know, I don't know how that'll play out, but I'm sure someone is studying that.
So also over the weekend, yesterday, Sunday, marked the 50th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. And what could have been a triumphant occasion to celebrate 50 years of the constitutional right to abortion was instead a moment to reflect on the degradation of that right over the last 6 months, which we've, you know, observed all three of us really closely on a piecemeal basis. But when you sort of zoom out, so much has happened over the past, you know, 6-7 months. 24 states either have or are likely to move to restrict abortion. 12 have near total bans, and a handful more have imposed bans before 20 weeks. And with Roe, you could not do that. There are also a bunch of states where laws are just sort of like in motion. They've either been paused or for whatever reason, providers are not comfortable providing abortion at this time. But it was a weird vibe yesterday. But also I saw a lot of people pointing out that there has been tremendous progress made. You're not going to have progress made necessarily in Mississippi, like you would in Maine or Colorado and Michigan. But I think I've definitely seen the sentiment that obviously the decision is devastating, but Roe was never sufficient. And we're definitely on, you know, a really long project to build something better.
You know, just like in Hollywood, a girl can't stay relevant past 50. So
precisely. So 50 sad. And not thriving.
You know, to your point, that's a really good point because even in other countries, they're now trying to add the right to an abortion into their constitution. So to your, hopefully, you know, we're just got to kill off the last of the Christo fascists, not literally kill FBI if you're listening. You know, we just got to kind of wait that out. And hopefully the future can be more free in the reproductive realm.
Yeah, I wanted to shout out, and I sent this to Amanda. There's a really, really good article on Jezebel by Susan Rinkunas. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. But either way, it's called We Deserve So Much Better Than Restore Roe. And it's about kind of reimagining how we view abortion rights and reproductive care for the future. And it's hard because, you know, I do think that the rolling back of Roe was a political miscalculation, I guess you could say, on the right. I think that it has galvanized people for this right. I think it's taken a generation that was maybe like complacent in some of its rights and shown them, you know, they can be taken away. I think it's scared even like, you know, cis male allies who look and see like, okay, hold on, a right was just taken away from people. That's not cool. You know, I think it's galvanized a lot of people, not just women or people who can be pregnant. But at the same time, it's hard to like laud that while knowing that like women in these states that have bans are in a really serious situation, and that multiple women have already, like multiple, like hundreds, maybe thousands of women have been affected already by what has happened here. And so it's like, I do think maybe long term, this will be the moment that takes reproductive rights and freedom to the next level, but the cost that it comes at is really high.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it kind of depends how quickly we're able to turn it around, how high the cost will like actually be. But I don't know. It's tough. The next 2 years are obviously not going to accomplish much.
Yeah. It is just still stunning to me that like we live in this reality that we've been warning, we were warning about for so, so long. And I know as like a woman that lives in New York, I keep myself, you know, updated. I read every headline about a woman almost dying, but it is just so, so strange to see how far some people have to go. Like we're going to talk about Wisconsin in a second. I'm sure you guys know, I mean, at least you know tons of people in Wisconsin. It's like, what the fuck do you do when you get pregnant in Wisconsin? And it's such an obvious question, but it still is shocking to me what people have to go through to end a pregnancy. And that's the reality that we've been in now for 7 months.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. Homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
So speaking about Wisconsin, you know, whenever we do lament about this, people ask, what can we do to help? And if you want to help, I think all eyes are on Wisconsin right now. Protesters, so many of them, the Women's March said, come to Wisconsin. They swarmed the Capitol in Madison yesterday ahead of state Supreme Court elections that will determine the fate of an 1849 abortion ban. This thing is still like in effect, sort of. Providers are not providing abortions as a result, and abortion is currently inaccessible in that state. Because the Roe versus Wade decision basically invalidated that law because it was like, you know, they have a right to an abortion, but it was never formally repealed. So it took effect after the Dobbs decision in June 2022. Republicans control the state legislature and have declined to repeal the law. I think it's so important to state that every time. Like, this isn't just Democrats trying to get something done. Like, Republicans at any moment could repeal this, even just for rape and incest. There are no exceptions for this. It's like you got to get two doctors to say it's okay. You can get an abortion in Wisconsin.
Or they could write a new law that's not from 1849. Like, if they were serious people, they could write a new law. But
they want that. That's what they're saying.
The thing is, they actually want women to live under the laws of 1849. So they're like, let it stay.
Yeah, no notes at all.
They're like, convenient.
We have nothing medically that we've learned to update this at all. Yeah. No reason.
We can save women if they're dying in childbirth, and we ought to. Interesting. The good thing
How
about Wisconsin
– How else are you going to get more babies?
Save them. Well, we're not going to have Social Security that's going to need to be funded.
Oh, my God. Duh. So many – they always solve their own problem.
They do. In Wisconsin, the governor is a Democrat, and the attorney general is a Democrat, so they have sued. And they're saying that this is ridiculous. We have new state laws protecting abortion access that obviously supersede this one. But, you know, like I said, the Republican legislature, nothing's really happening other than this lawsuit has continued to make it through the courts and will likely end up with the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which currently has a 4-3 conservative majority. But 2023 isn't off year election, but this is a massive off year election year for Wisconsin because elections for the Wisconsin Supreme Court are around the corner. They're on April 4th, and Democrats do have an opportunity to flip the court and gain a majority. Not only is the majority for conservatives only 4-3, but one of those conservatives is outgoing, so they're going to lose their incumbent advantage. So it's a really, really good chance here. And that could ensure, I assume it would ensure, that the state Supreme Court rejects the 173-year-old law and returns abortion access to Wisconsin. Wisconsin's also doing some other stuff. They're trying to get an abortion access referendum on there, but the legislature can kind of mess with that. So that's not even a guarantee. So now, you know, in order to...
And the state legislature there is cuckoo bananas. They have a really intense conservative majority there that, like, I mean, when Tony Evers took over as governor, they moved to like change everything about his job and what he can do. I mean, they like have declared war on him. So they're not reasonable people in the legislature at all.
Right. Absolutely not.
It's your craziest neighbor. That's what your state legislature is made up of.
Oh, God. Yes. I mean, even crazier than like the House ones. I mean, and anybody can be anybody, including George Santos or Kitara Ravache can be in the House.
Kitara Ravache. Yeah.
We should, did you guys watch SNL this weekend? It was really good.
Yes.
No, Bowen but Yang I should.
Did, yeah. Bowen played George Santos and Kitara Ravache.
And Kitara Ravache.
And it was very, I need to and watch also this. Aubrey Plaza was a really good host.
Well, and there was a Joe Biden cameo. It was a very and suppy there was, SNL. Yes.
Yeah, like the real Joe Biden.
Yeah,
yes,
he did.
He was on SNL.
He didn't go on the show, but he did part of the cold open with Aubrey Plaza because they're both from Delaware, and they did like a little bit about it.
That's so cool for
her. And they shared it as a collab on social.
How did I not see this? And how did this not knock the documents out of the headlines? That's my question.
I mean, I think it was because like yesterday, like, I mean, I know on Sup that when there's a tragedy, I don't put funny stuff on feed. So otherwise I would have, but that's probably why. Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
the other accounts agreed.
Yeah.
And Twitter was just like, we don't show Biden in a funny light.
No, absolutely
not. Not with the hero
not.
Of the White Lotus. Certainly not.
So speaking of Roe, this is a wild story that Elise and I have been chatting about. Last week, organizers at Sundance made a last-minute announcement about the premiere of the documentary Justice, a documentary produced by Amy Hurdy about the sexual assault allegations against Brett Kavanaugh. So it was directed by Doug Liman, who also randomly directed Swingers and The Bourne Identity. But I guess cool. Not so random. His dad was chief counsel in the Senate's investigation to the Iran-Contra affair and was also like – okay. involved in advocacy and the Attica uprising.
He's like an investigative Nepo baby.
Precisely. This is how you
it's
use
in
your
his
Nepo.
Blood to investigate. He has a natural affinity for investigations.
Yeah. And to make a movies like Swingers.
Yes.
They have been secretly making this documentary for a year, and it includes interviews with Ford, Deborah Ramirez, and some of Kavanaugh's classmates from Yale. The documentary specifically looks into the FBI investigation tied to allegations from psychology professor Christine Blasey Ford that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her while the two were in high school. And that prompted Deborah Ramirez, that's the Ramirez I was referring to, a classmate from Yale, to come forward alleging that Kavanaugh had put his penis in her face in college, and people could corroborate this. I did not expect opening this article this morning that I was going to have to confront the words Brett Kavanaugh penis over and over again on my Monday morning. The documentary does focus a lot more apparently on Ramirez than Ford. Ford is in it briefly, but mostly they have friends of hers in it. They're just sort of like she's said enough. But, you know, Deborah Ramirez did not have a chance to kind of publicly share her story. So there are lots of interviews with her. And one moment that the Washington Post called out in her interview, she said she knows it was Brett Kavanaugh because she remembers his laugh. And that's something that Christine Blasey Ford also said in her public testimony. That was something that she could not forget. So despite 4,500 tips, because, you know, remember, we were like, a lot of people were like, just do an FBI investigation. They were like, okay, fine. And they took a week to do it. They got 4,500 tips. And the FBI basically, you know, the week-long investigation didn't turn up enough to corroborate those claims. And Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed. But the film narrows in on one specific tip that the FBI did not investigate, in which a Yale classmate, I think his name's Max Steyer, and he was also the CEO of the Partnership for Public Service at the time, said he'd heard about Deborah's account and knew people who had seen the event. So he didn't say he saw it, but he said, I know people that talked about this and that it happened that you can talk to. And not only that, but that person said they'd heard of yet another instance of Brett Kavanaugh sexually assaulting an inebriated woman in a similar fashion. The FBI responded to the documentary by saying that the White House determines the scope of the investigation, not them, and they can only look for what they're asked to find. So notably, not a, we did look as hard as we could. And, you know, the directors say they're looking for someone to buy and distribute the film, but they're also working to investigate new tips that they've received since the premiere.
Are they having a hard time finding a buyer?
I don't think so. I think the guy just made a joke because he was like, maybe Brett Kavanaugh will buy it. Because like, maybe that was like a reference to like, Yeah. Well, also, like, isn't there, you know, we don't know who paid Brett Kavanaugh's credit card debt, whoever that is.
Oh, yeah. We certainly don't.
Maybe he bought it. But at least I were chatting about this morning. And that moment that he was confirmed was definitely among the saddest of the Trump administration for me. And it is interesting to see the potential for this all unfolding again. Should there be even more tips and more people come forward and say that, you know, I'm the person that told Max Steyer that, you know, who knows?
Can someone buy this immediately and distribute it? Because I need to see this.
Yeah, like, I was
I
like,
need to watch immediately.
What streamer is going to get this one? I will be watching and re-traumatizing myself.
Exactly. And if they don't, why not?
Yeah, I'm sure that this is going to get picked up right quick by one of the many, many, many streaming services that we have here. My guess would be there's going to be a bidding war on that one. Documentaries are like huge right now. Documentaries re-examining the recent past are huge right now. This is obviously an enormous story that everyone remembers from just a few years ago. New information makes it wild.
He's still on the court.
He just was part of the decision to roll back rights for women that had existed for 50 years. So it's definitely a must-watch documentary.
Yeah, let's get this. It's also interesting because I had not, you know, I think everyone sort of associates Christine Blasey Ford as the woman with this story. And I didn't really remember the Deborah Ramirez piece of it as well. So I'm actually, as terrible as it probably will be to hear the story, I think it's actually really important that her testimony is essentially recorded somewhere.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't know. It sucks to like mentally go back to that time because it was such a disturbing thing to watch unfold. Amanda and I were talking about it today, and I just remember like watching Blasey Ford's testimony and finding it to be so emotionally moving and just sincere, and then watching his, infamous meltdown and knowing that even though it was a type of male anger that I'd seen a million times before, I was just like, there was this part of me that was like, this is going to be successful, unfortunately. Like him crying and yelling and saying, I drink beer is going to be more successful than a woman just kind of quietly recounting her story. And it's unfortunate. It was very unfortunate and sad to watch it play out. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of the documentary. Unfortunately, this man is on the court, and to get him off.
He's never going
to
get off. Yeah.
I mean, to get him, there are so many people who need to be removed from the court.
Yeah, you can impeach a justice. They've done it before, I think, or they've tried.
It takes the same as a president. So,
And then they would, not that this matters, but you just know that they would, like, maybe we do that because then you force the Republican Party to make Brett Kavanaugh a martyr. Like, they would be saying it forever. They still do. And they probably still would, even if all of this was like corroborated or more people. I mean, I don't know how this many people come out with the same story about you putting your penis in their face in college and you think absolutely not a single one of them are telling the truth.
I think that we're more likely to get an expanded court than we would to get Kavanaugh off the court.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really tough. It's really difficult to get someone off the court. And like, I mean, Kavanaugh should never have been put on the court. These allegations should be enough to get him off the court. But we already have someone on the court who's actually worked towards an insurrection, whose wife is linked towards an attack on the United States Capitol. And that person remains on the court. So I'm like, if we can't get someone who is like visibly compromised off of the court, there's no way that this would get Kavanaugh off of the court, even as bombshell of a documentary as it is and will be. And like these people have this Deborah Ramirez and Christine Blasey Ford have a right to like have their stories told in full. It's not going to result in the removal of anybody.
I agree with you, but I do have some hope that like if the illegitimacies of numerous members of the current court are sort of – if it reaches a tipping point where the public is sort of just like – and we obviously gain the levers of power available, not just available, but like the public opinions in favor of this, and you have the right people who are willing to like actually take that step. I do think that these – cascades of stories, whether it's like a really effective demonstration of these allegations or, you know, more information about Clarence Thomas and the insurrection. Mm-hmm. If you keep kind of like chipping away at that, eventually we could get to a place where policy and circumstances could align and the leadership could align in a way that they will fix the court problem. That's my hope, yeah, more than like, yeah, impeaching. So yeah, you do have to say impeach, or like you have to say these things to basically like point out that it's, mm-hmm, necessary, mm-hmm, regardless of the likelihood of it to happen, because ultimately, like, eventually we could get a different solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's also a world where we pass some laws about the lifetime appointment of it all, because that's, you know, another element of this that is just so crazy. And it's like, that's a kind of workaround to get some of these people off of the court sooner. I mean, Brett Kavanaugh's a young man, which is part of the reason why he was selected, but Clarence Thomas is not. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, maybe this could spur like more creative solutions to the issue, like you're saying, some legislative workarounds.
Yeah, I wish we had heard more from the White House about like what actually happened with his little like commission to talk about reforming the court. It sounds like they wrote him a research paper and he was just like, I got to deal with the loans now. But I think you both put that perfectly. Like eventually there will be enough will and enough information out there to sort of like allow for a very narrow tweak that maybe might make some of us feel a little better. That is the end of our show today. Please, please, please remember to rate and review if you love the show, to bump us up. People are looking for new podcasts at the beginning of the year, so it's great to have us in those rankings, and we get there if you leave reviews. So if you haven't left a 5-star review, or you normally listen on Spotify, but you have access to iTunes, go leave one there. It helps us out so much. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman, and for Sammy Sage and Elise Morales, this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com. Betches.